Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ian Cundall, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. And if you're a Baseball America subscriber, you already know this, but we rolled out our August update of all 30 teams' top 30 prospect rankings. So we've gone through, trade deadline's done. There have been a few graduations since we last did this at the start of July. We did add the draftees since then. And in a couple of cases, it was kind of nice because now that the trade deadline's passed, teams, you know, players have moved on. In some cases, we got to move on guys who were at the back of 30s who got knocked off just because you had to add draftees. Now they get to come back on and all. But Ian, great to see you. We just dive in like we do on these now. And I just want to kind of ask you to start with, because we just finished this up. It's a lot of work, fun work, a lot of work. And I would just ask you, like, what, when you were doing this August update, what did you learn? What stood out to you as you were putting together your 30s?
I think there's a couple things. I think the first one is that the trade deadline really can illustrate how deep or not deep a system is when you're then having to do these updates. And I think, you know, the Rays are a great example of that for me. Is they made a bunch of trades. They traded a bunch of really interesting prospects who have moved on to 30s and other systems. But because of how good the Rays system is, and they're obviously, you know, near the top of our farm system rankings that will be revealed on Wednesday, it didn't really make an impact. Like, you know, the guys, they traded some guys that were going to move into the top 30 without a doubt. But even if they were moving into the top 30 with the Rays, it was still going to be in like the, you know, around the 20 to 25 range because of how deep the system is. But you look at some of the other systems where those guys went into and they're inside the top 20, even in the top 15 in some. And I don't think that's a miss or anything. That's just the Rays. That's, you know, that's why this team, when you talk to scouts from other teams, that's why they send in their best guys and have them get multiple looks, because they are such a priority target for so many teams because of how good their system is. So I think that really stood out. And then the other one is something that, you know, it's been interesting throughout the evolution of this system out the year, and it's the Orioles. Because talking to scouts at the beginning of the year, the Orioles, it was like, it's not great. You know, there wasn't, it was, you know, okay at the top, but a lot of those guys, and, you know, I think that's been reflected in our 100. You look at where they were in the preseason to now, they've had a complete turnover of their top 100 prospects, and not by graduations. Guys who were in there at the beginning of the season are no longer in there, and they've been replaced by guys who have been big risers. And I think the continued evolution of that system has been really fascinating to watch. And obviously they had a huge deadline. They acquired, I think, 6 guys who have slotted directly into the top 30. And all of a sudden, a system where I was struggling, and even talking to scouts, it was like there was no consensus for guys after about 15 or so. It was just like, I don't know, I like this guy. And then you talk to another scout, he's like, oh no, I hate that guy. I don't want anything to do with him. Now it's like I'm cutting off names of guys I really like. And I think, you know, yes, it's obviously not where the team wanted to go with the rebuild, but it's, I think they did a very good job at the deadline, as we talked about in past episodes, and really digging into their 30. It's not just that, it's they've also had guys take a major step forward as the season has continued.
I would put it this way, right? Like, to just give a couple examples for the Orioles, and let's do a little bit the Rays too. We've talked, you and I've talked a good bit. I got to see JT Quinn, you know, this year, and we've talked a good bit about JT Quinn. And JT Quinn is the kind of guy who, before all of this, was kind of one of the, I would say, the Orioles' top pitching prospects. Mm-hmm. But that kind of comes with some caveats, right? Because JT Quinn he's got really good stuff. It kind of, at the end of the day, like, if you took 10 worlds, universes that have a JT Quinn in it at this point and said, where does he end up? I would say in, you know, if there's like 10 paths, 8 of them end up with him in the bullpen. Right. Yeah. Like, he's probably a reliever at the end of the day.
He's also, but to be clear, he could be a very good reliever.
Very good.
This is a leverage arm if he's in the bullpen.
Right. Because he could get innings for you. We're talking about a guy who could be like impactful in the bullpen.
Yes.
But that's the kind of guy that you don't necessarily want to be 5, 6, 7 in list. No. It's much better when he is right now, which is 15. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that I think that, you know, there's some angst about is like Wheeler Alloy, who has had a very good season. Mm-hmm. But we've just got kind of consistent feedback that he's solid, not like there are concerns about him as far as the what when he gets, you know, upper levels, big leagues, and all that have not necessarily matched what his statistics may look like this year. Well, if that guy's your number 5 prospect, that's a little bit worrisome again. If that guy's your 15 prospect, which is what he is now on our update for the Orioles, that's really good, isn't it? That's like a guy who still has a chance to be a big leaguer.
Well, and that's the thing, and I think it takes some time to get adjusted to when you're not used to having one of the systems near the top. Is because he's 15th in that system, he would be in the top 10 in most systems in baseball. It's just the Orioles system.
55 high. Let me just lay this out for someone. Like, if you have not paid attention to what we do with BA grades and risk, right? A 55 high, that means he has a decent chance to be an above average. A 50 is your average BA regular, you know, MLB regular. A 55 is above average.
Yeah.
Now, he's high risk to get to that. There's still some concerns and all that to be cleaned up. But a 55 high is the range that puts you in like top 100 kind of, if you're not, he's not in top 100 consideration.
Like 125 to 150.
Like, but he's in that range. Like top 200 in baseball kind of thing. And he's 15th in their system.
Yeah.
I did the Padres. That guy, if he's on the Padres, he's like 4, 5.
He might be 1.
You know, yeah, he's in that range.
Or 2, actually. Sorry, Ethan Salas. Yeah.
Behind Ethan Salas, but yeah. Like Chris Schoolcraft and like guys like Yoel Aloy would be like very high up.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's the thing, that context does matter on this. But to give it another way, speaking of infielders, right? Emelian Petre, mm-hmm. Adrian Santana for the Rays, both get traded away, right? Mm-hmm. If you asked, chart a path where Emelian Petre goes from where he is right now to an everyday regular for the Rays, I could try. But there are going to be a lot of hurdles along that way, because they have so, it's like, okay, is that guy going to end up beating out? And we could go down the list of the, you know, the Daniel Pierces and the Cooper Flemings, and we could just keep going. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean like, someone may see, like, and this is where context matters. Someone would be like, the Mets traded for a guy who wasn't even the Rays top 30 in Emelian Petre. But tell us a little bit why the Mets fans should be kind of excited about having Emelian Petre in their system.
Yeah, I mean, Petre, and for the right, he was 31. He was the last guy, or excuse me, 32, I guess, because Santana was 31 because he was on the list and then moved off.
And Brandon Taylor was like 34.
Yeah, they literally traded 4 guys who I had in my just missed 31 to 35 range. 4 of those 5 guys, because Jacob Matz was the other one. But with Petre, he's obviously had a great season. Reach into the high minors, and it's supreme contact ability. You know, this is a guy, 12% in zone miss rate, 21% chase rate, which is, you know, that's above average, solid. EVs have improved this year. He's slightly above average now, whereas that's been an issue in the past because he's not the biggest guy. You know, he's pretty skinny. But the hard hit rate, that's the thing. It's up to 44% this year. And if you have supreme contact skills and can consistently make hard contact, you're going to get a lot of hits, and that's what he does. There's a lack of impact here, and that's what limits the ceiling. But he can play defense. He's an okay defender at second base. You know, that's second base. It's like maybe a tick above average, average-ish. Some people think he's more of an out, like a left field profile, but I think he's probably
going to be both, like that guy who kind of like slides back and forth.
Exactly. But you have, you know, plus contact ability, defensive versatility in a good way, not when we talk about it in a bad way where it's like, yeah, you can't play anywhere, so you have to move all over. This is someone who could play probably both. And that's a guy that, you know, in a Mets system that it's obviously not on the same caliber as the Rays, that's, he's in the mid-teens, and it's completely understandable. You know, that's the type of player that if you're the Rays, you should be trying to trade, because you're repetitive at that position, you have the depth, and you're keeping your more higher ceiling, more impact potential guys. Like, looking down further, someone like Andrami Antunez, who is another riser this month. I know there were teams asking about him. A lot more upside there when someone like Petre. If you're the Rays, that's the kind of guy you want to keep, because realistically, Petre is pretty repetitive, as you alluded to earlier, with what you already have in the system. Antunez has that higher ceiling. That's a guy who has a chance to be an above average regular. That's who you want to keep. So trading someone like Petre and packaging him with, you know, an Aiden Smith, who is more of a high variance, he made the hot sheet this week. He's had a great week. I think he's homered in, I want to say it's like 6 of his last 8 games or something, if you go back to his time with Tampa. So package it with someone like him, who's got more variance, you know, great defensive value, hit tool questions. And then Gary Gill-Hill, who I think this season has been a little bit of a disappointment. He's made it to the high minors. There were kind of some pretty big expectations coming into the year, especially coming off of WBC, where he was solid. But you know, that's the kind of package that for the Mets is extremely appealing. That's a farm system that is not deep, that has, frankly, you know, they've traded a lot away in the past through various deals. You know, Freddy Peralta deal this year obviously didn't work out well, things like that. They've made a lot of 2-for-1, 3-for-1 trades. For them, a 3-for-1 trade is a huge boost because now they got potentially three major leaguers for Freddy Peralta back. And for the Rays, you can trade those guys and it doesn't really make a dent on your system. You know, you just backfill that with other interesting guys. You know, they promoted a few guys up and all, and you know, they don't miss a beat because that's, you know, the apparatus they have going there. And so I think it's one of those trades where if you're a Mets fan, you can be extremely excited because you got interesting players. You have guys who in the updated Mets rankings, I believe Smith and Petre are inside the top 15 and then Gil Hill is on the back of the list. For the Rays, you're not missing a beat. Like that's, you know, and you got a pitcher who it seems like they've already started to make some changes with Freddy Peralta's usage. And he had a much better start yesterday than he had with the Mets for the last couple of weeks. So
unfortunately, like that's I would say the indictment for the Mets, yeah, is that you kind of had an expectation that whoever acquired Peralta was probably going to get more out of Peralta than the Mets did. And that's an indictment because, you know, but again, it also couldn't get much worse than it did when his time in New York. But so that's kind of a look at a couple of organizations. But what we really want to spend the time doing today on the podcast is we're going to talk about some of the prospects who really, you know, we've seen a lot of the big movement has already happened. All the big movers, you know, we're not going to talk about Josiah Hartshorne today. We're not going to talk about Eric Hartman. We're not going to talk about guys who like kind of the work has already been done. But we are going to talk about a couple of guys, a few guys who have really leapt up this month in our rankings, and we'll do that right after this quick break.
I know this is a busy time of year for many of you, including AJ. When you're home, you need everything to get done fast with quality.
Absolutely, that's why Factor meals are perfect for me. Ready in 2 minutes, healthy, pre-made, protein, all the things I like, vegetables, they're all mixed into one, and it's quick, easy, cleanup, done, boom, I'm full, move on to the next task.
No prep, no cleanup. Every week you'll find over 100 nutrient-dense menu items to choose from and new options like salmon burgers, shredded pork, and much more. Plus, add-ons you'll crave like pumpkin-flavored cheesecake and protein shakes. Let's eat real. Head to factormeals.com/FAL50OFF and use code FAL50OFF to get 50% off and one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while supplies last until 10/31/26. That's code FAL50OFF at factormeals.com, FAL50OFF, factormeals.com. See website for more details.
And we're back. So we want to talk about some of the prospects that caught our eye. And I'm kind of springing this one on Ian, but I realized that when we kind of did our run sheet before this, we're like, oh, you know, like, hey, let's make sure that we cover the guys who kind of really stood out this month. There was one I left out of that run sheet that we really kind of have to talk about, probably, which is, you know, we would be remiss if we did not talk about Angel Gomez with the Royals because he leapt onto the 100 and really did. And I would say, This is what I love about our team and kind of the process we have. Again, this is a cumulative project where it's something where we're all working together to try to build this the best way we can. And this was coming from multiple people, right? This was coming from, I'd say the starting point was Ben Badler, who does our, international amateur coverage, kind of started with, hey, I think we should really look at Anibal Gomez for the top 100. He was one of the top guys in the class coming in, looks like performance. I'm hearing feedback from down there that he looks great, that he really is a standout prospect. Then you get Josh Norris, who went down and was at the DSL All-Star game and talking to people down there when he was in the Dominican midseason, which again, thank you to the BA subscribers. We are able to get you this coverage. We are able to send someone to the Dominican Dominican Summer League All-Star game because subscribers allow us to do the coverage we do. And he's like, yes, 100%. This is a guy who really does stand out. He fits in that same group with these prospects we've had over the years where it's like, that's where we saw, you know, get eyes on Jesus Madej. And that's where we've seen guys like this kind of take this step. You know, that's the step. And then we kind of dive into, you and Jeff kind of really dive into the data on it. And it's like, everything here backs up everything that we're hearing from scouts, that we're hearing from front office officials. It all comes together, and this is kind of seems like the next of this group of like these prospects who DSL to prominence in a very short period of time now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the star trajectory. You know, this is the starter kit for what top 10 prospects are made of, is how I would look at it. And, you know, it's more than just the numbers, because there are a lot of guys hitting in the DSL this year. And I think, frankly, this DSL class looks fantastic. Like, it's not just him. There's a lot of really interesting players.
But yeah, like to your point, well, because we get this the other way, too. Why is this player not more prominently ranked? He's hitting 370 in the DSL.
Yeah.
That's a... The way I'll describe it, terrible analogy, but okay. When you say that milk is, you know, like they homogenize milk, right? And that means that they're kind of spreading it so that it spreads evenly, right? DSL talent is not even in any way, shape, or form. It's got different layers and striations and all. And so you could be one day as a hitter facing a real big challenge.
Yeah.
And the next day you could be facing guys who you're like, these guys should not be pitching.
Oh, there were guys throwing like the mid 80s, like some days. Yeah. But Gomez this year, he's hitting 348 with a 461 OBP, 591 slug. He's got 6 home runs, 13 steals. And as you said, like, it's just the data is just there's no holes in his game right now. Like, you know, it's 11% in zone miss, 19% chase, 46% hard hit rate. His 90th percentile EV is just under 105 miles an hour. That would be a great mark for a big leaguer. He's 17.
Needle scratch.
Yeah.
Would you see that for a teenager in the DSL?
He's 17, and he's doing it against, like, you know, it's he's doing it against every type of pitch. He hits spin. He hits bad fastballs. He hits high velocity. Like, the batted ball distribution is really good. You know, it's like he checks every box you look for when you're talking about a DSL prospect. And I think that, as you said, that's where the team aspect of this really comes to fruition. It's, you know, Ben gets us the info early. Josh goes down. We get eyes on him. We get external feedback. We have data analysis. Like, we're combining everything together, because this is not a jump we would do. Like, we didn't take this lightly. This was something we talked about a lot, because it's a pretty big, you're planting a flag if you're moving guy from off the top 100 into the top 50 in one update. But when Gomez is checking every box from every external source, from everything we're looking at data wise, like, there's sometimes you just have to make a move like this. And I think Gomez is the type of talent that you want to be aggressive with, because just look at the track record of these type of players. You know, Josuar Gonzalez has gone up to low A this year as an 18-year-old and is just already looks far too good for the level. Luis Hernandez, I mean, he's also been up there. He's a year behind and he's holding his own there. Jesus Mate, as you said, like the guys, like Gomez,
Jackson, I wouldn't be Trio, to go back a couple years before that.
Would you, it surprise you at all if Gomez just went directly to low A next year? Because I know the Royals don't seem like a team. I feel like the Royals are not that aggressive when it comes to those assignments. And so maybe they keep him out of the Midwest League because of the cold for a couple.
Well, sorry, you wouldn't fit in the Midwest League, but that's high A. So that you would do.
Or sorry, no, not the Midwest League.
So you would send him, though. You would be basically, you could send him to the Carolina League. You know, you could say, hey, we're sending you to, you know, you're going to be a Firefly.
Yeah, he's Columbia.
I think it's more likely, though, that you kind of like,
you do the extended for a month and then you send him there. And like,
you kind of slow walk him a month and a half.
Yeah.
Like the complex league starts. And then like, if he sets, we've seen this a little bit more now, like that you set the complex league season on fire and it's like, oh, we can't keep you here.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then that's what happens. And I think, you know, which is also kind of also could be described as like the LA De La Cruz plan, where it's like, I think LA De La Cruz years ago now, but like in the ACL, like he had that growth spurt, then pandemic was tied in this and all, but he goes to the ACL and it's like a couple of weeks that it's like, oh, you can't keep him here. And then, you know, you just move him on. That's, I'd say, if he was a Brewer,
well, yeah,
I would say expect to see him in Wilson.
Well, that's because, I was thinking about that. The Royals' track record, they're not as aggressive as some of the other teams would.
If he was a Red,
yeah,
I think he would play the entire ACL season probably. That's good. It's just different
teams. Organizational philosophies. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's just he's a super exciting player. You know, he checks all the boxes you look for. And it was one, I think it was universal. There was no pushback. Like, you know, this was one when we sent the list out to external sources, there was no one saying, hey, move that you're a little aggressive. Like, everyone was like, nope, that makes sense. Like, this is, I think, around baseball is already seen as one of, you know, the highest ceiling guys, maybe even in the Royal system for sure.
I would say this also with that. I would say that, and there's a confidence level now that you could not have a decade ago with this, mm-hmm. right? Which is, a decade ago, you could put a guy in the very back of the 100. And we did a couple of times. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was kind of the guy who I think was on the 100 before he ever played a pro game, right? He had that kind of like reputation. But when, even if you had the best scouting information you could possibly have from the DSL, if you don't have, when we did not have the underlying analytical data to go with it, you could always, like, there was always the possibility that there were real weaknesses kind of lurking mm-hmm. that had not been exposed at that level yet.
Yeah.
Now, again, doesn't mean it's not a guarantee of future start in the big leagues and all, but you're starting with a foundation of more comfort here because you do see about the guy's contact skills and his plate discipline and his power and all these things in a pretty broad-based way. That, you know, again, this is the thing that goes back a couple of years ago of Jesus Madej. When we put him in, it was like you knew some aspects of him were standout already, right? Like you didn't have to worry about them in a way now. And speaking of that, that leads us into our next guy who was also a big riser, which Ian Samil Serrano with the Nationals was another big bump up. And that was one, again, when we talk about this, I would say that kind of explaining the process of how we do this, he was already moving up, but that was like a late, like Jeff Ponce does the Nationals for us. And he was like, got a message right going into the weekend. We're rolling this out on Monday. And it was like, hey, can I really move Serrano up further? I got feedback from out of, you know, a non-national source saying that guy is a stud. And then you dive into it further and it's like, yes, you should absolutely do that. Why is Samil Serrano moving up?
Yeah, I think you illustrate it really well there. That's the good part about this process is we have that flexibility that we're constantly trying to find as much information as possible. And sometimes it comes in too late to be representative this update. So, but in this case, we were able to get it in time. And yeah, Serrano, Ben actually flagged him too. He was another mm-hmm. one that Ben had flagged early because he was one of the Nationals. I think he was one of their higher bonus guys this year. But you know, extremely projectable 6'3" outfielder, had solid season in the DSL. His numbers aren't on the same level of someone like Gomez, but when you go to the data again, you know, really low 16% in zone miss, 17% chase rate, 48% hard hit rate, 104.7, 90th. Like, it's pretty similar data right there to what we were talking about with Gomez. And when you have that blend of data, then you have the external evaluations that are extremely good. And then, you know, even Nationals talking about him too, you know, he checks all the boxes you look for in that, you know, teenage projectable outfield prospect. And I he doesn't have the same type of, I think, buzz as Gomez does right now, but he's someone that, you know, when you look at it, this is the starter kit for a potential top 100 prospect in the future. Might take a little longer than someone like Gomez, obviously, since Gomez is already on the list. But, you know, it's the type of guy that when you're going through the season that when someone flags him, you really want to keep note, remember that name, because, you know, we could be looking at June of next year and it's like, oh, yeah, this guy's in low A and playing really well. And of course, he's on the 100 because I think the Nationals are one of the more aggressive orgs, as we saw this year with some of their promotions. So, you know, this is the kind of guy that you really want to flag early. You want to have around, you know, that 10 range in the good system to be like, hey, keep an eye on this guy. We're really high on him. And, you know, something to build on next season when he makes the jump stateside.
Along those lines, the one I think that you probably like, again, you're doing the Orioles, kind of the path that Caden Hunter has taken, I think is kind of instructive also for like why we do now update this. Like, because I had people, you know, every now and then I'll have someone's like, you're just, you know, why are you guys updating so often? Right. And it's like, again, I appreciate if someone's asking that question and it's like, you guys are working too hard. It's like, oh, we love what we do. Like, yes, but this is hard work. But I would say like Caden Hunter is pretty instructive of why you want to update regularly in season and not just be like, well, here's our list. We'll get back to you in a year from now. Because obviously Caden Hunter has very much been on your radar for the Orioles top 30 all year. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about what Caden Hunter was in April versus what Caden Hunter is in August, it's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what's funny is we jumped Hunter onto the list right at the beginning of the season, off got really good external feedback, except I was just looking through my scout notes and it was all, yeah, he's a reliever, but he could be a really good reliever. And that was, you know, that was why when we put him on, it was near the back of the list, because this was a guy, sixth round pick out of USC last year. His velocity is up substantially. That was the first indicator. You know, we saw it in the spring. carried over to the regular season. He's sitting like mid-90s now, up to 98. This was a guy who sat in the low 90s last year. And again, just a great example of why it's so hard with college pitchers now, because so many of them come into pro ball and are just are dramatically different pitchers than what you saw as an amateur, and why, you know, those initial rankings when we're doing the handbook in the offseason are, it's just very difficult because you're really just throwing darts because, you know, a lot of these guys are going to be completely different by the time we next get eyes on them. But anyway, he as early in the season, it was really encouraging feedback, but it was like, hey, this guy's a reliever, like no shot at starting. It's really good stuff, but it's just, I don't see a starter at all. And that was multiple, you know, evaluators. Over the summer, it started, you know, as the season went on, it started to soften a little bit. It's like, hey, you know, maybe it's 60-40 now, you know, still lean reliever, but there's a chance to start. And as the season has gone on, he's just taken major strides with the secondary stuff to the point where now it's flipped. And there's a lot of the consensus is, hey, this guy has a pretty good chance to start now. And that's what pushed me, why we jumped him so high. This one is, you know, there's a very big difference in value, as I think you probably covered. There's a huge difference in value between a reliever and a starter. That's why teams will hold on to guys as starters for as long as possible, even if it might be to the detriment of their long-term like potential as a reliever. And in Hunter's case, this has paid off. You know, this is a guy who's now, he's gotten up to double A, and all of a sudden he's throwing six innings in outings when at the start of the year he was going 2, 3, 4 innings at most. He's now going six innings and striking out, you know, 8 to 10 guys per outing. He has 4 pitches that can miss bats. You know, fastball has an elite whiff rate. It's 42% whiff rate on the fastball. I think before his previous start, like that's an insane number when it's sitting at 94, averaging 94.4 miles an hour with, you know, really good shape. It's plus extension, high IVB. Like this is he checks all the boxes you look for fastball metrically. And then you move on to his secondary stuff, and it's like, oh, wait, he has 4 pitches that can miss bats at around a 40% clip from secondaries. Like, and that was the thing coming in the year. He was kind of a 2-pitch guy. His secondaries have continued to develop, and I think the Orioles deserve a ton of credit here because this is a guy that, as I said, 6th-round pick. You know, he was known, obviously, as a USC, you know, Big Ten pitcher, but he didn't have any stuff like this. He's added velo. He's refined his secondaries, and now, you know, you've got a guy that, who is 4 pitch mix. I was talking to a scout about him recently, and he said the lowest pitch grade he put was a 50. It was all 60s and 55s. And so you're talking about 4 potential above average to plus pitches with improving command and control. You know, that's a starting pitcher recipe right there. And I think the other encouraging thing is he's held his velo. Like we see this a lot with guys that really peak velo early in the season. And then over the course of the rest of the season, it kind of slowly downticks. He's still doing the same thing he was early in the season. And so, yeah, I mean, he's had an incredible season. I think he's as we do more reporting heading into the offseason, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up on a top 100 list when we release that in what I think is January. You know, this is a guy who his development has been, he deserves a ton of credit. The Orioles deserve a ton of credit. Like this is a huge developmental win. It's looking like for the Orioles.
Got a couple more of these we want to dive into. A couple more prospects who really kind of stood out in our top 30 updates for August. We'll do that right after this break. So one of the guys I wanted to talk about, System I Do, is Eduardo Valencia with the Tigers. And the most important thing, if you're watching on YouTube, that graphic where it says catcher, because that was reason, like, he was added to the 40-man roster, kind of a great story, like a guy who's been kind of a minor league lifer who kind of really had a breakout season last year and added to the 40-man roster, but even then, like, kind of put him on the very back of the 30. And it was literally came down to the feedback was, you know, a lot of questions about, is this guy gonna be able to catch? Like, yeah, you like the bat, but is he gonna be able to catch? And if he's not, he's kind of a first baseman slash third catcher. And to go back to what you just said about starters and relievers, you better be great. If you're that's the kind of guy who, it's like, he played for 5 years in the big leagues. He had 150, 200, went up and down a lot. You know, he had a one war season where he kind of ran into a few home runs 1 year or whatever, those kind of guys. And to Valencia's credit, and I want to say, like, this is like one where we always say that evaluating catcher defense, especially college, amateur, but even in the minors, is hard. Mm-hmm. And the Tigers just gave him a very, very big vote of confidence, which is, I know Jake Rogers has been moved twice in since then because He was DFA'd by the Tigers, and then he went to the Orioles, and then the Orioles were like, oh, if you need Adley Rutschman's caddy, because I know Adley's still hurt, so you can have Jake Rogers now. And so, but they DFA'd Jake Rogers, and that meant that, and I know Jake Rogers not having a great year offensively or anything like that.
Great defender, though.
Great defender. And it really is kind of a vote of confidence that they're like, Eduardo Valencia can be our backup catcher. Now, they've got Dylan Dingler. This is not a job share. This is not one where you're like 1A and 1B. This is 1 and 2. But to Valencia's credit, if you had said at this time last year, hey, Jake Rogers is healthy and Eduardo Valencia is the Tigers' backup catcher, I think that would have been a really like shocking statement to make. And here he is. And again, I don't want to make it sound like he moved up. So he moved up, right? He moved up into the mid teens. I don't want to make it sound like this guy's number 4 on the Tiger system now, but the difference between this guy is a great story as a guy who's made his major league debut and he can be a third catcher slash first baseman slash DH sometime. That's one kind of career. If he can show that he is a legitimate backup catcher who can, with a better bat than most backup catchers, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Well, that's the kind of guy who we could look around. And there is plenty of track record here. Like, if someone wants to say, well, you missed on that BA, and I'll raise my hand because I do the Tigers list. And it's, yeah, you can. I will also point out, like, the story of Brandon Valenzuela in the big leagues right now with the Blue Jays, which is, like, catchers are developed. We like to say catching development is not linear. It's something where a lot of times it can be something where it doesn't look like it's clicking. It doesn't look like it's clicking. It doesn't look like it's clicking. And then all of a sudden it does. The game slows down. They're able to handle the workload. And then all of a sudden you've got a guy who takes this massive leap forward. I think that's kind of what we've seen here with Eduardo Valencia. And that kind of gives him a chance to go from an up and down guy who spends a lot of time in AAA and gets a lot of, you know, like brief times in the big leagues, to a guy who could end up having a pretty lengthy big league career. So kudos to him, because his defense has gotten better. Ian, we're going to flip this around now because you do the Twins. We've talked about Merrick Houston on the podcast before, but we've never had a doubt about Merrick Houston's defense. How surprised are you? And the reason he's rising up is he just keeps hitting.
Yeah, it's really impressive. You know, he's gone up to double A and he's hitting 304, 387, 507 in 36 games.
Okay.
So
that 507?
Exactly, yeah.
No.
I mean, he's doing it. It's a Texas League. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because I saw Houston this spring for the first time in person, and it's an interesting swing. It's not I don't think it's one, you know, Tom Emanski's teaching in terms of swing mechanics, but it works for him. And that was the thing, you know, seeing him for a long extended period, it was just, he just puts the ball in play. And you know what? That can go a long way if you have good bat control, which he does. And it's carried over to the regular season. And
can I ask you that?
What
it's also can go a long way to his credit. Like, I feel like he's a guy who, if he was trying to do more,
yes,
it would result in less.
Yes, 100%. And I think he's a great example of, yeah, it's that trade-off of, hey, like, maybe I could hit a few more home runs or hit the ball a little harder, but that's not what's best for me. And the flip side of that is someone like Franklin Arias, who has sacrificed contact to get to more impact in a good way. With Houston, that's just not him. You know, this is a guy, you look at his EVs, 90th percentile exit velocity, 101.3 miles an hour. It's fringy, below average for someone his age. You know, doesn't stand out at all. But he's making consistent hard contact. It's a ton of line drives, and he just stays within himself. He doesn't expand the zone. He makes good swing decisions. He makes contact on pitches in the zone. He has good pitch recognition skills. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about a lot in the offseason with him because the defense is that good. This is a guy's potential, you know, 65, 70 shortstop. We've seen that guy. Taylor Walls is obviously the best example. You don't have to hit really at all if you can do that. Houston's now gone to someone who I don't think he's going to hit for much power, like as currently constituted. You know, maybe it's 5 home runs, 8 home runs a season. But now he's gone from a guy who was like, can he hit 230 to, hey, he might be a 260 hitter now. And if he's a 260 hitter with 8 home runs with his defense, he's going to be like a 4 WAR player every season. And that's why, you know, there was a ton of skepticism with him at the plate coming into the season. It was, and talking to scouts who were in spring training, it was like, yeah, I love the glove, but I don't know about this swing. Cause you know, a lot of the pro scouts, this was their first exposure to him. Cause they're not covering Georgia. He was at Wake Forest, right?
Yeah. He's at Wake Forest.
Yeah. They're not covering Wake Forest. So this was their first exposure and it's like, I don't know about the swing. And it's just, if it continues to work, there's no reason to change it. And yeah, it's continued to work. You know, well, he's making consistent hard contact and yeah, he's just exceeded all expectations I had at the plate. I'll be honest. You know, I can admit when I'm wrong. And with him at the plate, I definitely was skeptical and he's, you know, exceeded all my expectations so far this season.
I will throw out, this also may mean that he's just a 230 hitter. And that still would be like, probably like Taylor Walls is an instructive example of this to me. Like yeah. Now Taylor Walls in his first full season, It was a different time, right? Like it was a different time. So they moved players slower back then. But Taylor Walls did hit 304, 393, 428 for low A Bowling Green in 2018. Now, Merrick Houston has moved faster, high A, double A. But and then the next year, Walls hit 273, 43, 452 between high A and double A. Then we had the pandemic. And then he hit 247, 387, 444 in triple A. Then he's up in the big leagues, right? So what I would just say about that is like if you looked at Taylor Walls's track record as a hitter when he was in the minors and you said, oh, he's going to end up being a 198, 289, 294 career major league hitter, you'd be like, that seems light considering what he's done. So
yeah, maybe
when you have a guy like this, like even if you say like, oh, the big leagues ends up being very hard for a player like this.
Yeah.
It still goes to your point, though, which is if you say I'm going to take 60 points off of everything he's doing or 70 points, again, 507, I think if he slugged 435, I think that would be a remarkable development.
I think if he slugs 400, it might be.
Yes. But what you're saying, though, is really kind of true, which is, okay, when you look at this and you look at the Twins long term, if you said that their structure is Culpepper, again, I do think that this is a guy who slides Culpepper probably over to second or over to, you know, you can construct your infield where you have multiple guys who can hit better than Merrick Houston, but Merrick Houston providing kind of that run prevention value at shortstop and not being a zero at the plate. That's something beyond what I think was the expectations potentially for him coming out of college. It is a really positive development. And hey, there's also the possibility, again, I use Taylor Walls as an example because he is kind of the archetype of this guy right now. But you do also see, over the years, examples of guys, it's almost a little bit like catchers, I would say, with some of these shortstops, where it's like, if you're able to do this for the long run, to keep you in the big leagues, eventually the big league game even slows down a little bit for you as a hitter. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Otto Lopez this year, I think is the best example. Those guys DFA'd twice, but it could always play defense, and he's now leading the National League in hitting. Like, you know, I like to think about it. Defense will get you to the big leagues and can keep you there for a while, but the offense is what keeps you as a starter. And like, that's, you know, that's the thing with Houston is, the offense has now reached that point where I think you're comfortable projecting him as an everyday guy, which is why he moved into the top 100. And as you said, like the defense is superior to Culpepper, who just came up to the big leagues. Culpepper's made major strides there defensively too, but you know, it's easy to envision the Twins having a very exciting young core with Houston, Culpepper, and then the outfielders, obviously Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez. Like, it's a pretty exciting team, especially for an offense that somehow is leading the American League in runs this year.
Which is an amazing and shocking development. Yeah. But like kind of your point, that's like, you know, and again, you want to have a little depth with that team. You're going to need a little depth because if you said, hey, well, you know, if we get 150 games out of Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez, watch out. And you're like, well, they haven't combined to do that in pretty much any season so far. So you kind of won't want to go that far with it. But yes, that is a very, and again, an intriguing, because they're a team that actually bought at the deadline and again, didn't sell a whole lot, you know, didn't spin off any of their top level prospects. And coming into the year, I would not have put Merrick Houston in that group. Now he is. I think that you have to say that he has moved his way into kind of that top tier of prospect for them, you know, And I would throw, you know, Riley Quick is, you know, also in that, like, we don't want to forget about him. I do feel like, again, to kind of to wrap up on them, the other thing that just did stand out with them, though, is like, I do feel like that that's an org where you have a very, like, the top seven there is not hard to kind of line up. Top no. seven or eight, is it?
No, it's a, I think it, you could even extend it a little bit. I think that the top 10 is pretty, like, consistent, because, and this was the issue when working through their list, so many of their pitchers are hurt right now. You know, looking down, Charlie Soto has barely pitched this year. James Ellwanger has had surgery now. Jose Olivares has been hurt. Like, they just have had a ton of injuries, and it was very difficult, like, to rank once you got outside the top 10, which the top 10 was extremely straightforward. Everyone you talk to, it's the same thing. But yeah, once you get outside of it, it gets a little murky, because just so many of the guys have missed so much time with injuries this year.
But that is today's Baseball America Prospect Podcast, as we look at some of the prospects that have caught our eye that moved up in our August Top 30 update. By the way, if you haven't checked it out, do go over to baseballamerica.com, because we also, not only do we have full Top 30s for all 30 organizations updated as of August, but on top of that, if you don't want to go through all 30 orgs, which why wouldn't you? It's a lot of fun to click through this. But if you don't, we did pull out, like, here are all the risers and why they're rising. We did pull out another list that put together everyone who joined in where they rank for all 30 organizations. So if you just want to know, like, okay, I know that if I'm a Mets fan and I know that they added a lot of guys, where did all those guys slot? Here you go. But also, we have so much more than that, you know, over there as well. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. You know, I think you'll really enjoy it. But on top of that, if you're here on the YouTube channel or on the podcast feed and somehow saw this podcast but are not subscribed, either way, please subscribe, because it not only will make sure that you get to see this, hear this every week, but it also makes sure that other people can see it as well, as to our visibility. That is the Baseball America Podcast. For Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.